Welcome to part two of the Sunshine Radio podcast with Family Fostering Partners. In this part, we find out more about the actual process of becoming a foster parent, the ongoing support and training they provide, and some of Eddie's experiences of actually having a child placed with him. We start off with Judith asking Eddie about the Skills to Foster course, which is usually the first chance prospective foster parents get to be in the same room as other people in the same position as him.
It wasn't scary at all. I mean, I think we had two sessions or more online because of the COVID restrictions at the time. And then we had two sessions that were done in person. And no, not at all scary. It was very informative. And basically, those are the type of times that I remember graphically, that I think it was you when explained those neurological connections that a baby makes, that it was a path like a traveling from A to B, and normally in a normal child is a straight line, not normal because everybody's normal,
but in
a child that hasn't experienced trauma is a straight line, whereas in children that have experienced trauma, is a lot of roundabouts before they reach B. And our role as foster parents would be to allow them to make those connections to end a trip in that B. So that was part of the training, one of the things that obviously many things that we were trained on. But no, it wasn't scary at all. We met with other potential foster parents, what it was very refreshing to see people who were in the same situation as we were, and to learn about the expectations and the fears and to share experiences. So no, it was a very rewarding time.
Was there any point where you thought, are we doing the right thing, when you were in the process itself?
Yes, many times.
Right.
But not maybe what you're thinking. Every time we were exposed to other foster parents or to training or to the agency, every time that happened, we returned home and our decision was only reinforced.
Oh, right, okay.
Many times with my partner, we talked about it and we thought, we know we are doing the right thing. So because of everything that we were learning throughout, our initial thought was just reinforced. Everything that we thought we were there for was just agreed. And
I think it's really interesting you said there, obviously, when you were seeing other foster parents as well. And I think when you do Skills to Foster, that's sort of your first introduction to that really important support network as well, isn't it? Because as well as having the support from the agency, because obviously when you came through panel, you were allocated your link worker who visits you regularly. But as well as that, we've got a community of foster carers as well, haven't we? And obviously you have, you know, regular support groups where you meet up with these foster carers and in training and things. And I know you've maintained relationships, haven't you, with people that you met in Skills to Foster.
Yes.
That, you know, and you know, the person I'm thinking about lives quite far away from yourself doesn't he? But, you know, you've maintained that, and that support, I think, is really, really important, isn't it?
Is vital. And I mean, the name of our agency says it all, you know, it's family. And you become part of a family in a way, because it's not just the foster or the foster parents, but it are also the children that you might meet regularly in events, like other children, other foster parents' children. Is all the community in the agency that we are in touch with. You feel supported all the time. Birthdays come and then I receive lovely letters and everything. So there is always, always that support. And I always know that if it is not my link worker, it's always somebody at the other end of the line, regardless of what time of the day it is. So, yes, you become part of an extended family. What is really beautiful,
I think that support system is so important, isn't it? You know, we are passionate about, you know, making sure that our children are in the right homes and that you're matched appropriately and things. And the only way that we can make sure that that is maintainable is by making sure that you always feel supported, isn't it?
And if I can't say it, that was one of the One of the aspects that I was really drawn to when I was thinking of adoption or fostering, and that was one of the differences that between fostering and adoption that I felt it suited me better than adoption, because adoption, normally once you get a child allocated as your adopted child, then there is not that much support like there is in fostering.
Situation.
Yeah, it's a very different situation. And I wasn't, I wasn't sure that I could do this without all the external support that I'm going to get through fostering.
I think sometimes things that people don't always realise is that fostering isn't only on a short-term basis either, is it? Sometimes when people are comparing adoption and fostering, they get this idea that fostering is short-term and adoption is long-term. Whereas, you know, we are working with foster parents who, I can think of one in particular, who, you know, her young man moved in when he was 4. He is now 19 and they've still got a really positive relationship. He lived there, you know, until he turned 18 and post 18. So fostering isn't just, you know, what I think maybe stereotypically we think of fostering, where children come in, spend a short period of time and then leave. We, you know, we do short-term foster care, and we do respite, which obviously is, you know, short periods and sometimes regular short periods as well, to give the main carer some respite or to give the child a different environment. But we do also specialise in long-term foster care as well. So lots of the children that we work with are looking for long-term permanent homes.
Yeah, and in terms of, because I know that to date you're still waiting for that long-term match, because it has to be right. It has to be right for you and your family, and it has to also, very importantly, be right for the child. But whilst you've been waiting, you've done what we call internally respite, but what the children call sleepovers, because that's, you know, my children don't go for respite when they need a break. So when I need a break, they go for sleepovers. So we use that language because it's better. It's more child-centred. It explains what you do. But you have done some respite for us, some sleepovers for us. What was it like when you had that first young person come to say? Were you nervous? Were you excited? What was it like for you?
Well, it's, I'm glad you asked that, because obviously all through the period of assessment and all through the training that we've done and all the stories and backgrounds that obviously confidentially we hear about our children, I mean, one has got an image in our heads of how these children might look like, might behave, might be. And I will always remember the first time we met our young lady that stayed with us on a two-week sleepover, putting a face to that, feeling, that that image that you built up in your mind. It was incredible, and I can only compare it. It's maybe not a good comparison, but when a lady is about to give birth and they first see the face of the baby, so you see, right, so that is what, this is the way they are. And then getting to know them and their nature, and it was just magnificent. It was... to be honest, it was much better than I ever expected.
That's nice to hear. I think what you said is really important there, though, because when we make the matches, so when we will ring you up and we will say, there's a young person who needs a foster home, Ed, this is what we know about them, what do you think? It is very, very difficult, because on paper, what you read about children can sometimes be quite negative, can't it? You know, it's about all the things they can't do sometimes, because people need to know what the challenges are. But we often forget that, you know, children are much more than their trauma, aren't they? They're, you know, they're whole people. And for every challenge, they will have a skill or a particular part of their personality which is really endearing. And whilst we have to tell you what the challenges might be, it's really useful to know that there's a flip side to that, because there's a proper person behind all of the trauma, isn't there?
Totally. And I always believed, you know, that there is always a reason for for certain behaviors. There's always a reason. There's always certain experiences that they might have gone through that has created that type of behavior. But I'm also a great believer that with patience, with the right nurturing of that child, anything that might be challenging can be corrected.
Yeah, I think, you know, behavior is always a form of communication, isn't it? And as long as we are responding to that communication, like you said, in a nurturing way, isn't it? And looking at the underlying reasons. If a child is trying to communicate with us, they're using the only skills that they've got available, isn't it? So it's up to us as the adults to take a step back and think, okay, what could be going on here, isn't it? What are they trying to communicate?
Exactly.
Yeah. And that sounds easy when we say it, and we know it's not in practice. We know that when you're faced with a challenge, it can be very difficult to think, oh, what are they trying to tell me? When actually what you want to do is just deal with the behaviour. And that's why we've got the support. That's why the training is there. That's why the support is there, so that you can pick up the phone, and even if it's to say, I've handled this and I'm not sure I did it the best way, and maybe next time I would do it differently.
Definitely.
Because none of us are perfect, and none of us are responding to other human beings every day in a perfect way, are we?
No.
You know?
No, you're correct.
And I think what you were saying about the importance of matching and things as well, isn't it? And I know, Ed, you're waiting for that long-term match at the moment, aren't you? And you know, I'm sure that can be a I think you likened it to, you know, waiting for a baby to be born as well, isn't it? But I think, you know, like Jude said, we're really passionate in the agency, and we want to make sure that any time we place a child, you know, with a family, that we are doing our utmost to make sure it's the best match that it can be, isn't it?
Yes, well, I totally understand the need for that perfect match, because, for example, in my case, we are approved to be foster parents of a single child between the ages of 5 and 18, long-term. So that means that if I was to get a child tomorrow that is 5 years old, that child will live under my care until they reach the age of 18.
You want to make that commitment.
I've already made in my head, but also means that the match the match needs to be as perfect as possible. So those things cannot be hurried up, because there is a lot of investigation and trials that need to be done before.
And I think, you know, our mantra is, and what we truly believe, is that the children that we look after have been through so much before they ever come to our door, to our office, to start with, in terms of, you know, on paper, can we do a match? That it is our responsibility to make sure that we only offer a match if we are pretty sure that, you know, the foster parent that we're putting forward has got the skills, the expertise and the commitment that that young person needs. And in some ways, we make no apologies for that taking a long time sometimes if it's a long-term match that you're looking for, because it's our duty to get it right for children.
You're right. And the last thing I would want as a foster parent is to add to the trauma that child has already suffered, because may not be the right child for us.
And I'm really pleased, because I know that you, Ed, have had the opportunity to look at one potential match.
Yeah.
And you know, we as an agency were pretty confident that there was enough there for us to ring and say, okay, what do you think? But we were also really glad that you were able to say, actually, I'm not 100% sure that that's the right thing for us. Because it's important that foster parents can say, that's not right for us, as well as, oh, yes, please, could you put me forward for that young person?
And we will 100% always respect that as well. You know, We like Judith said, we want to make sure that the best matches are there. So we will bring some to you. But it's, you know, it's great that we've got that relationship with our foster carers, that they can be open and honest with us and say, actually, this is what I'm worried about. And, you know, we will always respect you and support you in those decisions as well.
Certainly, because it is obviously, it is a lot of responsibility, but it's also a lot of emotional investment that you put into taking care of a child. And although there is a clause by which you can't still, you know, if things don't work out, you can somehow change things, it is something that for me I would never consider that would be the last resource available to me. But if you go, as you said, Judith, from day one already with doubts in your mind that that might not be the perfect match, then it's better not to do it. It's better to wait, and it's better to wait until the agency as professionals can guarantee me that that match is going to be adequate for my lifestyle or for my skills.
In terms of that sleepover that you did, Ed, what was there one piece of learning from there that you will take into your fostering when you have your full-time long-term match?
I think one learns a lot, not just about the children, but also about oneself. And I learned, for example, that I've got so much more patience than I thought I had. I tend to be quite impatient with adults. When it comes with children, with children, I was so much more patient with the children than I even with my own partner. And also, I had to stop myself from sometimes spoiling them too much.
I think that's really easily done on a sleepover.
Yes, yes. But one of the things that I learned, I mean, I learned obviously about the different personalities of the children. When it comes to sleepovers, is pretty easy because they are with you for a short period of time. So it tends to be quite an amicable relationship. The only difficulty that I found is maybe you are not just taking care of the child, but you're also dealing with a different type of parenting because that child is already somebody's foster child. So you have to be flexible and you have to accommodate. For example, I mean, I tend not to eat meat at home, not that I can consider myself a vegetarian, but I just hardly eat any meat. When we had our first foster child staying as a sleepover, I just gave up my being a vegan because I thought this is just too complicated, you know. So it requires a lot of flexibility, understanding, and also humour sometimes, lots of humour.
Yeah, I think the humour is really, really important, isn't it? You can't underestimate how often you need to maybe just have a laugh rather than just make the stress.
Yeah.
And be open-minded, you know, because I did learn lots of new skills that I didn't have before, yes, from the child, like, for example.
What were those skills that
I just dancing TikTok videos. All the different cartoons that are out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's... I have to say, I mean, it's like a breath of fresh air having a child coming into your home with all the different quirky ways and everything. It's absolutely
because we do get set in our ways as adults.
Oh, definitely,
don't we? You know,
definitely.
And it's quite nice to be pushed out of that sometimes.
I said, I think, as part of my application, that I didn't want to become a grumpy old man in my later years, and I think a child brings this different view of the world that I think is necessary for everybody to just keep a kind of eye on what it is important in life. And for me what is important in life is to take care of somebody and give back what maybe society has allowed me to have in terms of the strengths that I've got, that I want to pass them on to somebody and show them that the world sometimes is difficult, but it's also a magnificent place to live.
It's rebuilding people's trust and confidence in adults and in humans, isn't it? Because that's often broken.
And also, obviously, we've talked about, you know, the support that you get, but I think what we haven't really touched on around that is, and I know you've got your link worker, who you've got a really good relationship with, but, you know, she was... after you had your sleepover, she would have visited you and had those conversations with you. And, you know, our link workers visit fortnightly. And sometimes they're speaking to you, you know, daily on times, aren't they? So did you find that beneficial, that you were able to sort of maybe debrief after your young people had gone home?
Oh, yes, yes. Very, very important. And especially, I think, when you are waiting for a long-term placement, like it's in our case, It is very important to have those conversations because, I mean, at the moment we have had two young ladies on a sleepover and very different personalities. And having those conversations with a link worker, and it's not comparing, but it is more than anything assessing which type of needs they have, but also which type of strengths we've got that we can give to that child. And it is very, very important to have that connection with a link worker. But also, I think is a magnificent service that the agency offers. Mm. Yeah, because you feel always supported.
Yeah. And if you were speaking to somebody who was thinking about fostering, who was kind of where you were making that first connection with us in whatever way that would be, from your experience of going through it, what would be your advice to them, Ed? What would you say to them?
It's just to go ahead, first of all, obviously, to chat with you initially. If they have any questions, I am 100% sure that you will be able to answer them. To see if they have the skills and mostly the interest that requires to go through this path. And for some people, they might feel that they are ready to jump and to start the process of becoming a foster parent. For others, might be something that they want to consider later on, but for me, it was something that I always wanted to do since a very early age. But I was never courageous enough to take the first step. It required a certain kind of mental state for me to be able to make the first initial contact. It happened this year, as it could have happened maybe next year, but I am very glad that I did it.
Good.
And my message for them is just like, contact the agency to make sure that at least you have made that first step and so you can initiate a conversation.
Because we do talk to a lot of people who are interested and might say, but I'm moving house next year, so next year will be better for us. So it is interesting to see that process from wondering about fostering to making that contact and then to coming into the assessment process. It takes people quite a long time sometimes to go from A to B to C.
It does. And they're obviously, the assessment process is also a lengthy process because it has to be done so thoroughly, and as I explained earlier, is such an in-depth study of a person's life that it requires time. So it's not like if I decide today to give a call, I'm going to end up with a child tomorrow.
No, that
takes months and months and months. Mm. And in my case, it took, more or less about 7-8 months until I was approved as a foster parent from the day that I first contacted you. So it requires quite a long period of time to go through all those checks. So initially, I would say, yes, if you have certain idea of what you want to do, or even if it's just questions, just contact the agency because they will be able to assess you, but also to be able to answer any doubts, questions, fears, like I had initially, that they were put to rest immediately.
Because unfortunately, the pandemic hasn't helped people's living situations at the moment, and the stresses and the traumas that are on parents as well. So we are seeing more and more children at the moment who need foster care and who need to be matched with foster parents. So for us, it's about encouraging people who might be thinking about it to ask the question rather than talk themselves out of it. Talk yourself into it and come and talk to us, because we will talk you out of it if we don't think it's right for you.
And there's no commitment in that first call at all, is there? It's a chat with you while you're watching Emmerdale, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is indeed. It is.
Great, thank you very much. So if you have listened to us today and you think you would like more information, or if you'd like to get in contact with us, then please check out our website, which is www.familyfosteringpartners.co.uk, or you can look for us on Instagram or Facebook, Family Fostering Partners.
And don't forget, we have got that live talk facility. So if, like Ed, you're shy about picking up that phone, you will always get either me or one other person on talk who will be very, very happy to answer any questions you've got. Thank you.